30. She is looking for some song suggestions of joy and comfort.
This is 91.7 KAXE in Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE in Bagley and Bemidji, 89.9 in the Brainerd area, and on your smart speaker. We are people-powered radio in northern Minnesota. You can join us at KAXE.org.
Coming up in just a few moments, we're going to have a special edition of the Up North Report. Megan Buffington has a story on recent discovery of elevated lead samples in the city of Hibbing.
We received support from Itasca Economic Development Corporation, creating and retaining quality jobs in Itasca County through education, research, and connections with businesses, working to help grow small businesses of all sizes and strengthen our local workforce. Learn more at itascadv.org.
Our temperatures right now range from 17 below in Hibbing to 21 below in Hibbing. We do have an extreme cold warning for much of the area, or an cold weather advisory that's going on until noon for most of the area today. We can expect a mix of clouds and sun with highs 5 to 10. Snow is possible this afternoon with southwest winds up to 30 miles per hour. Chance of snow continues tonight, lows 4 to 9 below. Mostly sunny tomorrow with highs near 4 and blustery northwest wind.
You can listen to the Season Watch pod with hosts Charlie Mitchell and Heidi Holton, John Latimer, and a rotating cast of characters. Season Watch is for the curious, filled with the delights of nature. This week, UV flashlights and woodpeckers. Tune in Saturday at 1:30 and Sunday morning at 10:30.
It's time now for the Up North Report.
For KAXE News, I'm Megan Buffington with a special edition of the Up North Report. Lead pipes in public water systems are common throughout Minnesota and the country. So Hibbing Public Utilities' recent discovery of elevated lead in some samples isn't all that unique, but HPU's response is. Minnesota water providers are required to sample inside 30 homes each year. In Hibbing, 6 had lead levels above what the Environmental Protection Agency calls the lead action level. Here's Paul Plombon, HPU's Energy and Operations Manager.
The limit for lead is 15 parts per billion. We had some that were just above that, some upwards of close to 60.
There's no safe level of lead exposure for anyone.
Anna Schleep is the Minnesota Department of Health's lead and drinking water coordinator.
We know that it can cause impacts to learning, development, behavior, hearing problems, things like that. The biggest exposure to lead is still from lead paint and lead dust. But drinking water is something that lots of people use.
Hibbing Public Utilities could have simply sent out a notice about the lead levels, done a bit of education, and addressed the issue at the homes it knew had too much lead. But instead, they chose to be aggressive. Those elevated levels came back in October. Before the ground froze, they dug about 500 potholes. That means blasting down to look at water lines on both the utility side and the customer side.
If you're not familiar with it, there's a line coming, water line coming from the house all the way out to the curb stop, and which is the shutoff for the house. And then there's usually a smaller section, depending on where the water main is, that is utility owned, and that goes out to the main.
Before that, HPU knew about 8 or 9 lead lines. The potholing upped that count to about 90. Service lines are the main way that lead gets into water in Minnesota. Lead solder and fixtures are big sources, too. That means even homes with well water can still have lead. Anytime water sits, lead can leach in. Concerns around lead poisoning really started to grow in the 70s. New lead plumbing was banned in 1986. The health department's Spleach says there's been a lot of work to lower lead exposure in those decades. For a long time, the focus was on corrosion control to minimize lead in water. In 2021, the EPA changed its lead and copper rules, adding requirements to identify and replace lead service lines. Minnesota's goal is to replace all these lines by 2033.
But our general manager is confident we can do ours in 2 to 3 years.
Most Minnesota water systems, including Hibbing, are still in the identification phase. That's evident when you look at the state's online map of lead service line inventories. There, you can check each water system to see how many lines are lead. Hibbing has about 6,000 service lines. The type of about one-third are still unknown. Customers are often hesitant to let people into their homes, but HPU has been more aggressive about that too. In the last week, they've looked at some 150 lines. It's a slow process, but getting inside homes to help identify those lines is a big focus this winter.
This customer side, being able to complete this is a really high priority, because that will help inform the rest of our potholing projects.
Elliot Dixon is HPU's engagement specialist.
And so, you know, they feed into each other to make sure that we're making the best decisions we can, putting the funding in the most effective place possible for these upcoming replacement projects as well.
The cost of the work is prohibitive for a lot of communities. The state provides some funding, but that's part of the reason behind Hibbing's aggressive approach. More data to back up the need for additional money means they could get more to help pay for replacements.
If you want to look at it like this, Hibbing is more standing up for the little guy. And if we have to be the voice of reason and be down at the state capitol and in Washington, D.C., talking about this, spreading the word of what we're doing, helping other communities if we can, and even if it helps just by being down there and being the squeaky wheel and saying they're not going to go away until we give them something and help them out, then we're okay with that.
That's it for this special edition of the Up North Report. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Megan Buffington, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report is made possible by Woodland Bank, serving the area since 1920, with locations in Grand Rapids, Cohasset, Hill City, and Deer River. Woodland Bank believes in building community and serving local nonprofits like KAXE.
It is about 7:07. Thanks for listening to the Monday Morning Show here on People Powered KAXE. I'm Jennifer Barr with Steve Noy. Coming up in just a few moments, we're going to hear a conversation with KAXE News Director and Heidi Holton about a vigil and protest that happened outside the Crow Wing County Jail in Brainerd on Saturday.
We received support from Beltrami Electric, building an all-of-the-above energy strategy that combines the diverse strengths of sun, wind, coal, and water. Beltrami Electric Cooperative, connecting communities and powering life in northern Minnesota for more than 85 years.
We also receive support from ICTV. ICTV connects, informs, and empowers the community through diverse media. Learn more at watchictv.org.
We are in an extreme cold warning or advisory until noon today, just so you know. Today's weather looks like a mix of clouds and sun, highs 5 to 10 degrees, snow possible this afternoon, with southwest winds gusting at 30 miles per hour. Chance of snow tonight with lows 4 to 9 degrees below zero. Mostly sunny Tuesday, mostly sunny, highs near 4, blustery northwest wind up to 25 miles per hour, overnight lows around 10 below. And then Wednesday, we're looking at mostly to partly sunny skies with highs in the single digits, northwest winds 10 to 15 miles per hour.
For our question of the week, we want to hear about those little things that bring you joy, especially when the world can feel really overwhelming. It's important to take care of ourselves, and you know, you can feel lots of things at once.
Definitely.
So you can text us about those little things that make you happy, 218-326-1234. Up next, we are learning about a vigil held at the Crow Wing County Jail to protest the more than 40 detainees of ICE that are being held there.
It's the Morning Show on People Powered KAXE. I'm Heidi Holton with KAXE News Director Chelsea Perkins. Saturday in Minneapolis, a second U.S. citizen was killed on the streets by the Department of Homeland Security, 37-year-old ICU nurse Alex Preddy. Also on Saturday was a vigil at the Crow Wing County Jail in Brainerd. Chelsea, you and our photographer Lori Schall were there. Why were people there?
So the vigil was actually planned well in advance of the events on Saturday. It was a vigil that was intended to bring recognition to the fact that there are detainees, immigrants, that are being held in the Crow Wing County Jail. These are immigrants that are in the custody of ICE. There's more than 40 as of right now that are currently in the Crow Wing County Jail. And that information has just been kind of making its way out to the public, and people are concerned about it. They want to know why that's happening in Crow Wing County, why Brainerd. And so the group Brainerd Lakes Area Indivisible set up a vigil to take place on Saturday. And of course, this was before they knew of the events that were to take place that morning in Minneapolis.
So what did you hear from people who were out there?
So there was about 300 people that showed up to this event on Saturday, and it was about 1:30, so a few hours after the news of the shooting had broken. And there was definitely more people there, I think, because of what had happened in Minneapolis. A lot of the people I spoke with mentioned it. They said it was what motivated them to come out. I spoke with Tessa and Ava Capel, who are a mother and daughter from Nisswa. And Tessa, the mother, said she heard about the vigil on Saturday morning, and she had learned about it actually after the shooting in Minneapolis and felt that it was time for her to participate.
I am out here for my community, my kids, my future grandkids, my state. I just feel like such a huge violation of our rights as human beings, and it's time for us to stand up and speak out. It doesn't have to be political. It has to be about human rights. I was very inspired by the protests yesterday and the showing of Minnesota and Minneapolis and the support all over the country. And then after what happened this morning, my first response was anger, just sheer anger.
So I also spoke with Ava, her daughter, and when I turned to speak to Ava, I mean, she was visibly upset. She had tears in her eyes. And this is what she had to say when I asked her about how she was feeling.
I just never thought this was something I would see. It's awful.
Yeah, so Ava, you know, she's 18 years old. She attends Brainerd High School. And I asked her how she felt about being able to vote this year for the first time with everything that's been going on in the world. And this is how she responded.
I have hope that my generation can make change and that my vote will make a difference. So I'm looking forward to that, and I'm excited to get to have that opportunity.
How does it feel to be in a group of people like this size?
I think it gives me so much faith in my community. To see this many people show up, it just, it's like a light in the darkness.
Chelsea, I hear singing there and also drumming. Is that was the tone of the vigil, would you say?
Yeah, they were singing a couple different songs. They turned and faced the jail to sing to the people that are being detained. And, you know, Ava, that was the first protest she's ever attended. And as her mom spoke, like I said, she just got really emotional, and it was an emotional day for a lot of folks. I also spoke with a couple from Crosby, and they asked me not to use their names, but they had already made plans to come to this vigil. But they also then became aware of what had happened in Minneapolis on Saturday morning, and it kind of changed their plans on what they were going to put on their sign.
My sign says I was about to make a sign this morning, but it was interrupted with more murder.
And why do you think it's important to be here today when it's 10 degrees below zero?
Well, I think every person in town is so privileged to live in an area like this. And, you know, there's not diversity. And, you know, when the people of diversity can't stand up by themselves, you have to come out and make a statement for them. And would wish the Crow Wing County Sheriff's Office would do something. Klang say something. You know, all these people grew up together around here. Everybody knows everybody. And the people that are silent will be remembered, and the people that spoke will be remembered.
So he was referencing Sheriff Eric Klang there when he said Klang. And I actually did speak with Sheriff Eric Klang. I'm working on a story about that, and that'll be up soon at KAXE.org.
Yeah, then folks can learn more about the issue that you went there for. But of course, by the time you got there, another killing on the streets of Minneapolis. So how long did it last? Where did people go after?
It was about a half hour, and that was planned, I think, in part as well, because like we said, it was 10 below zero. It felt like 20 at least below zero with the wind chill. So afterward, probably close to 100 people who'd been at the event went to the First Congregational United Church of Christ in North Brainerd. And they're the organizers with Brainerd Lakes Area Indivisible. They gave people more details about what's going on in Crow Wing County, the ways that they plan to make their voices heard, plans to contact Sheriff Eric Klang and the Crow Wing County Board, and just let them know that they don't support the county cooperating with ICE. Here is Hallie Pond. She's one of the organizers with BLA talking to the group at the church.
We are opposed to all of these agreements here. And your presence here says that you might be exploring that opposition too. Okay, so at some point, you know, well, in December, this is another important thing to note. State Attorney General Keith Ellison in his office released a statement basically saying that sheriffs cannot unilaterally sign these agreements in counties. They must gain the support of the county commissioners. So that gives us an opening for resistance and to ensure that is followed here in our neighborhood.
So we did report that here on KAXE in December that Ellison had made that legal opinion about these agreements. And so this group is looking at that as an opportunity, like she said, to make their voices heard on this matter. So Hallie grew up in Pine River. She went to Pine River Bacchus High School, and she moved back there a few years ago, she said, to take care of her grandmother. And I spoke with her afterward, and I asked her about like how she was feeling about the day's events once she learned about the second fatal shooting by federal agents that's happened in Minneapolis in just a few weeks. And, you know, she really got kind of philosophical on me about it and just talking about what it's been like to deal with these emotions. And I think a lot of people are grappling with this right now.
If I stop to hold those feelings for too long, it's debilitating. And so I'm learning how to alchemize my anger and outrage at the system and outrage at the behavior that is undermining due process and undermining the values that I hold near and dear and really cherish as a Minnesotan, like values of kindness and taking care of our neighbors and mutual aid. Learning how to alchemize that outrage into something useful is what keeps me going. I have my moments, tearful, grieving, angry, sorrowful moments too. And that's an important part of the process, is holding space for those feelings and doing that in a community like this one where we're building people power through organizing. That is the most powerful thing, is when people come together with a shared vision for the future and a commitment to keep doing one small thing at a time. And really, I mean, it might sound cheesy, but I love Mahatma Gandhi's words, be the change you wish to see in the world. It's not do the change, it's be the change. So it's learning for me personally how to become more peaceful, how to, you know, sharpen my powers of discernment and critical thinking and patience and compassion and curiosity to build bridges where currently there are lots and lots of walls of fear and division.
As I was watching social media over the weekend, I was seeing lots of protests and vigils that happened spontaneously after the killing of Alex Preddy, including in Bemidji and Grand Rapids. And these were cold conditions, and these were people who wanted to get together with others, much like what we heard here from Hallie.
Yeah, it was really, I think, for her inspiring to see so many people show up on Saturday, especially like you said, with the conditions. And we've been seeing a lot of that lately, right? I mean, it's been very cold and people have been gathering anyway.
Yeah. Lots of national media seems to be the big thing they point out, and saw a lot of Minnesotans say it's not that cold.
Right. We know how to dress in the weather, right?
Yeah, we don't have to stay inside. Well, let's talk about how other people are reacting, specifically our elected officials from our region.
Well, I did take some time to poke around and see what people were having to say about this. And first of all, I saw DFL State Senator Grant Hochschild's reaction. He represents a big portion of the Arrowhead region, and he did speak out a few times on social media since the shooting. So on Sunday night, he amplified a message from the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus, which has put out a statement that it has deep concerns as Alex Preddy was legally armed and there has been no evidence produced that indicates he intended to harm the officers. Of course, we know that's become a major part of this story, is the fact that he had a gun on him and had a legal permit to carry. And so the group is calling for an independent investigation. Hochschild said Northern Minnesotans take responsible gun ownership seriously, and he wrote, quote, "This shouldn't be complicated. Minnesotans expect accuracy and straight talk, especially on issues as serious as an American citizen's rights and life. If we're going to have real conversations about public safety and rights, they need to start with the facts. Glad that the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus clarified things, per Secretary Noem. So what Hochschild was referring to here is that both Kristi Noem and FBI Director Kash Patel have made statements that it was illegal for Preddy to be carrying the gun while at a protest. And Minnesota law does not prohibit carrying a loaded firearm to a protest. And even if it did, I think it's arguable to describe the situation in which he was shot at as a protest.
Did you see anybody else weighing in?
So I checked in on a number of social media accounts. Most were pretty silent overall on the matter as far as Northern Minnesota legislators. But also on Sunday night, Republican Representative Krista Knudsen posted a video sharing her point of view. Knudsen represents District 5A, which includes the cities of Park Rapids, LaPorte, Bacchus, and Lakeshore. So here's what Knudsen said.
They are using people as pawns. They are telling them to go and incite violence, cause mayhem, cause chaos. And now we have seen two Minnesotans lose their lives because of this. This has got to stop. This could all end today if Governor Walz would do the right thing. Cooperate with federal law enforcement officers. Honor detainers and allow these federal law enforcement officers into our jails to collect the bad guys so they can send them back home.
You know, Chelsea, we're hearing such differing points of view, but the state has weighed in and some, especially the Minnesota Department of Corrections, is making a big stand on this.
Yeah, the Department of Corrections, and I would say an unusual move. I mean, as a reporter, I can't recall ever seeing really anything like this, to be honest with you. But the Department of Corrections issued a very strong rebuke to the idea that they aren't cooperating with federal immigration officials. That's been repeated time and time again by federal officials, that they aren't cooperating. So the DOC actually launched a webpage late Saturday to combat what it described as DHS misinformation on this point. And it says that it honors every ICE detainer, even beyond state law requirements, and coordinates every custody transfer with ICE with no exceptions. The webpage says that, quote, DHS claims do not match Minnesota records or jurisdictional reality. So meanwhile, the federal government, on the other hand, is openly refusing to cooperate with state law enforcement on an investigation into Preddy's death, even after a judge signed a warrant for the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. And late Saturday, a federal judge stepped in and issued a temporary restraining order to prevent federal officials from altering or destroying evidence in the case. And I do also think it's worth noting that Governor Tim Walz has asked over and over again for Minnesotans to remain peaceful in their protests. And by and large, that is what has happened.
He's also continued to ask the people that are out there on the streets, where the citizens of the United States have seen lots of different video, and he is asking people to take those videos so that we can see different points of views.
That's correct. And I think that it's safe to say with this case and with others that we've seen thus far, that video has proven to be valuable. The video in this case is not matching what the Department of Homeland Security has said about the incident. And the same can be said for the shooting of Renee Good a few weeks ago. It is legal for U.S. citizens, for people to film the actions of law enforcement and immigration enforcement on the streets. It is not against the law.
So what's next?
Well, we are expecting two court hearings in federal court today. One is a hearing in the case that was filed earlier this month on behalf of the state and the cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, seeking an end to the ICE surge. And the other is a hearing on this latest lawsuit over the Preddy investigation. You know, beyond that, Heidi, honestly, it's tough to say. I mean, this story continues to unfold in real time, and the people of Minnesota continue to be impacted by what's going on one way or another.
Yeah, we'll continue to do our best with our partners at other nonprofit news in the state, MinnPost, Minnesota Reformer, as well as national coverage from Morning Edition and All Things Considered, and our newsroom. You guys will continue to be looking into matters of ICE and sightings that might be in greater Minnesota and anything that's coming up that's relevant for our region.
Yes, and if you have any news tips to share related to this subject or any other subjects, you can email us at news@kaxe.org.
That's Chelsea Perkins. I'm Heidi Holton for KAXE.
We will have photos later today from the vigil in Brainerd on Saturday from our staff photographer, Lori Schall. You can watch for that at kaxc.org. So coming up before 9 o'clock, a conversation about how greater Minnesota residents are showing up at local government meetings in response to ICE moving into smaller cities and towns throughout the state. And that's with MinnPost reporter Brian Arla. It is 7:25. You're listening to the Monday Morning Show here on KAXE. I'm Jennifer Barr with Steve Noy.
We receive support from Minnesota Power, an elite company powering our region's homes, businesses, and industries since 1923. Learn more about its vision of a carbon-free future at mnpower.com/energyforward.
Coming up at 7:45, another installment of What We're Reading with children's librarian Tracy Campa. She has new picture book recommendations, plus she'll share her hopes for the 2026 Youth Media Awards, and those are going on today.
It's time for Events Up North, a closer look at some of the events happening across northern Minnesota. Central Lakes College in Brainerd presents Connect Effect, a chance to examine human connection and the difference between the real world and the screen world, today through Wednesday at the Dryden Theater on the Brainerd campus. Sessions are at noon and 5 p.m. on today and tomorrow, and at noon on Wednesday. Register at clcperformingarts.com.
And Crossing Arts Alliance has a class at the Pine River Public Library today at 4 o'clock. Learn how to sketch the winter landscape using pastels and charcoal. You can register for that online at crossingarts.org.
NAMI Grand Rapids and the Minnesota North Psych Club host a viewing of the film Good Side of Bad, Wednesday, January 28th at 2 p.m. at Chucker Auditorium on the campus of Minnesota North in Grand Rapids. The movie explores mental health, recovery, and resilience. A guided discussion follows the movie.
And Itasca Waters has a special Practical Water Wisdom webinar on Thursday, January 29th at noon with Sarah Elliott. Explore how wildfires are affecting the health of our waters. Register for that at itascawaters.org.
The Minnesota Discovery Center in Chisholm has a local history presentation Thursday, January 29th at 6 p.m. Learn about socialist women of the Iron Range with Ty Hiltonen, free and open to all.
And Bemidji Senior Center has their winter rummage and bake sale this Friday from 9 to 4 and Saturday from 9 to 3. All proceeds will benefit the Senior Center.
The winter lecture series continues at the Forest History Center in Grand Rapids Saturday, January 31st, at 1 p.m. Historian Willa Hammett Brown will talk about the forces that built our communal memory of Northwoods Lumberjacks.
And Brainerd Nordic Ski Club's Lumberjack Jaunt is happening Sunday, February 1st at Northland Arboretum. Choose from skate or classic with distances of 6 or 16 kilometers. There's also a free kids race that's offered. Find more info and register at BrainerdNordicSkiClub.com.
Events Up North is made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota. If you have events to share with our listeners, you can email psa@kaxe.org. And look for Events Up North at kaxe.org every week.
We're going to listen to our album of the week now. It is by Lucinda Williams called Worlds Gone Wrong. This is Lucinda's 16th album, full of original songs, plus a cover of Bob Marley and the Wailers' So Much Trouble in the World. The 72-year-old and stroke survivor has written songs of protest that meet this moment. The song we're going to hear this morning also features Nora Jones. It's called We've Come Too Far to Turn Around.
Thank you. or to turn around. From the east to the west, from the north to the south, we have come too far to turn around. And we are here to bear witness to this monstrous sickness. We have come too far.
Album of the week, that is Lucinda Williams. That track featured Nora Jones. The album is called World's Gone Wrong, and the song, We've Come Too Far to Turn Around, here on the Monday Morning Show on People Powered KAXE. I'm Jennifer Barr with Steve Noy.
Good morning. We receive support from the Move It Real Estate Group, assisting clients with real estate purchases and sales for over 25 years, not only in Grand Rapids, but across northern Minnesota. Move to what moves you. More at moveitrealestate.com.
We also receive support from Edward Jones Financial Advisor Christina Gallis, helping individuals and business owners reach their financial goals. More information at edwardjones.com. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
We have an extreme cold warning or advisory until noon today, with today's weather being a mix of clouds and sun. Highs 5 to 10 degrees with snow possible this afternoon. Southwest wind gusting up to 30 miles per hour. Tonight with a chance of snow, lows 4 to 9 below zero. Tomorrow mostly sunny, highs near 4, blustery northwest wind up to 25 miles per hour. Overnight lows around 10 below. And Wednesday, looking at mostly to partly sunny skies, highs in the single digits with northwest winds 10 to 15 miles per hour.
Taking a look at our current temperatures, Bemidji, our warm spot at 15 below, and Hibbing, the cool spot, 21 below. It is time now for best wishes. We're going to do our best to wish friends and neighbors happy birthday, happy anniversary. We will start with yesterday, January 25th.
We've got Katie Godfrey, happy birthday, 72nd birthday in Grand Rapids.
And Emily Sector, happy 51st to you in Portland, Oregon.
We have a 77th birthday in Effie with Jim Lipinski.
And Alex Zimmerman, happy birthday to you yesterday in the Grand Rapids area.
For today, January 26th, Storm Riley turns 66 in Big Fork.
And Dan the Eggman Williams is 70 today in Deer River.
Emily Norton Finken turns 36 in Grand Rapids.
And Jamie Kell, happy birthday to you in Minneapolis.
Our best wishes to you all.
If you have birthday or anniversary greetings to share, you can always text us, 218-326-1234. We're going to hear a song now, and this is the Milk Carton Kids with A Friend Like You.
Miles to go across New Mexico, might make the state line by dawn. Cans and bottle tops piling up since our last stop. You've been quiet all night long. Your eyes and you start cursing at the rain. It's hard to leave sometimes than it is to stay. You said you've been driving since Santa Fe. We smoked our last joint yesterday. 1,000 things I won't say, but a friend like you could be the end of me. You roll the window down, let the wind blow your hair around. Through the air, stared into the orange sky, laid your hand over mine. You said I'm never going back there. Close your eyes and you start talking in your sleep. I know you got secrets to keep. You've been dreaming since happily. Why the hell do you have to be so sweet? I want to say hey, thou. I've been driving. my last joy yesterday. A thousand things I want to say. So sweet, I want to say a thousand things, but a friend like you could be the end of me.
New music from the Milk Carton Kids, A Friend Like You from their upcoming album Lost Cause, Lover Fool, here on the Monday Morning Show on KAXE. I'm Jennifer Barr with Steve Noy.
We receive support from the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association, dedicated to conserving the rich ecological landscape of Minnesota, offering memberships, educational camps, and habitat projects. More information available at mndeerhunters.com.
We also thank Atchison Tire in Grand Rapids, providing service and offering tire brands like Bridgestone, Firestone, and Toyo, serving the area since 1916. More at atchisontire.com.
Sometimes the world can be overwhelming, so this week we want to hear about the little things that bring you joy. Text us at 218-326-1234. Let us know what brings you joy.
Coming up in just a few minutes, we're going to hear what we're reading, our show all about books. Today, we'll hear from Grand Rapids Area Library Children's Librarian Tracy Campa. She has reviewed three new picture books, plus we'll be hearing her hopes for the 2026 Youth Media Awards that are happening later this morning. But right now, it is time for our daily dose of phenology. Phenology is the rhythmic, biological nature of events as they relate to climate. Here's John Latimer. And we will get to John Latimer in just a moment. And support for KAXE comes from North Homes Children and Family Services, providing compassionate mental health services to children and families at home, school, and in the community. You can find more information at northhomes.org.
On today's date, January 26th in the year 2004, I watch as a pair of ravens excavates a hole 3 feet into the snow in order to recover food from a road-killed deer that was buried under that snow in the ditch. One raven stood atop the pile of snow and watched very carefully while the other descended in the hole and ate. And they were clever enough, smart enough, to remember where that deer was, and when times got tough, they went back there, dug their way down to that body, and found a meal. And that just is the beginning of how smart ravens can be. These guys are true survivors of the North, and a pair of ravens together like that, they are almost indomitable. They can do these kinds of things and other equally impressive acts of memory in order to keep themselves alive through our cold winter.
That's your daily phenology. Tune in tomorrow morning at 7:20 for John Latimer's latest observations. We'll also hear student phenology reports starting around 6:45.
And coming up in our 8 o'clock hour, we have at about 8:40, we're going to hear from Minute Post reporter Brian Arla, Heidi Holton had a chance to catch up with him about his coverage of citizens' involvement in local government to protest ICE in places outside of the Twin Cities. And 9 o'clock this morning, Heidi Holton, your host for Headwaters, bringing you a great mix of music. Also bringing you the request line at about 10:30. Today, Heidi is looking for songs of joy and comfort.
Check KAXE.org for information about food-related resources across northern Minnesota with hours of operation and locations of food shelves, along with information on soup kitchens and community meals. Add resources in your region by emailing news@KAXE.org.
What we're reading is our show all about books, produced by our staff librarian, Tammy Bobrowski. Today, we'll be hearing from Grand Rapids area library, children's librarian, Tracy Campa. She's got three new picture books that she has reviewed, plus you'll hear about her favorite books from the last year that she hopes will be recognized at the 2026 Youth Media Awards that are happening later this morning.
I can read anything. I can read everything.
Sometimes a book comes along that is so Minnesotan, it demands to be shared. Even if you feel like you've lived the plot yourself, perhaps too many times. Slowly, the ground is covered by white, each flake whooshing down to take its place among the others, until it is finally announced, Snow Day! The lure of the outside is great, and two young friends meet in the yards between their houses to start the intensive labor required to build the perfect fort from which to hold an epic battle. The snowballs fly until one friend must warn the other about imminent danger about to slide off the roof. And the snowball fight is necessarily abandoned for another winter joy. Soon, though, cold fingers and red noses force our intrepid adventurers inside for some hot chocolate with marshmallows, which reminds them of unfinished business still waiting in the yard. If you yearn for the joy of a snow day spent outside, or want to share this particular type of joy with friends who might live in warmer climates, check out The Snowball Fight by Beth Ferry and Tom Lichtenheld. I love a good memoir. And a graphic novel memoir with defining illustrations is hard to beat. Carlos lived in Cuba with his family, including grandparents who owned a farm across the road and an aunt who lived next door. He was happy playing with friends, catching tarantulas, and going to the beach with his siblings and his abuelo. After his father won the lottery, though, Carlos and his family packed up and moved to the city so his papi could open a furniture-making business. While Carlos adjusted to life in the city, however, Fidel Castro plots to take over Cuba from Batista. The political tension increases, and Carlos's life gets less predictable and significantly more frightening until the day his papi disappeared. And Carlos's sense of safety crumbled into fear. Neighbors told on neighbors. Private property was seized, and quickly it became too dangerous to go to school. Carlos and his family are invited back to the country to stay with his abuela and abuelo until things might become safer in the city. A knock on the door reveals a monumental surprise, which ends in a terrifying journey. This book, How to Say Goodbye in Cuban, is the story of the author's father, a story kept quiet until many decades had passed. It is a significant historical memoir, and its importance is evident, especially as our country finds itself at historic crossroads. I very much appreciated this book, How to Say Goodbye in Cuban, by Daniel Miares. And I think you might, too. Anybody know what a pocket bear is? I didn't until I read Pocket Bear by Catherine Applegate and did a little deep diving. Pocket bears, also called mascot bears and soldier bears, were tiny stuffed animals, usually around 3.5 inches tall, that soldiers would tuck into their pockets as both a safety talisman and a reminder of loved ones at home. Along with their tiny size, a hallmark of the bears was their slightly turned up eyes. So when the pocket was opened, often in the mud of the trenches, the bear would be looking at the soldier. These mascot bears reached their height of popularity during World War I. The pocket bear in Applegate's story is the lead stuffy at the Second Chances home, where stuffed animals are washed, mended, and given another go at it. The home is run by Elizaveta and her daughter Dasha, themselves refugees and victims of the war in Ukraine. Told through the eyes of Zephyrina, a cat who wanders through the night and often brings gifts home to Elizaveta and Dasha, Pocket Bear is chock full of hope, wonder, and a whole lot of love and care during a time when this world needs a lot of that. Super short chapters makes this a wonderful read aloud. Next time you're at the library, check out Pocket Bear by Catherine Applegate.
This is What We're Reading, and we're hearing book recommendations from children's librarian Tracy Campa. Up next, can you believe it's already award season? That's right. Tracy's got a review of the big two awards given in children's books and some of her favorite titles from 2025.
And now, my friends, it is time for the real excitement of the day. Today is indeed Newbery Monday. Today is the day that the American Library Association announces their Youth Media Awards, which include the Coretta Scott King Awards, which are given to outstanding African-American authors and illustrators, the Michael L. Prince Award, awarded to a book that exemplifies excellence in literature for young adults, the Pirabel Prey Awards, presented to authors and illustrators who best portray the Latino experience, the Robert Seibert Medal given to the best informational book, the Sidney Taylor Book Award given to a book that best portrays the Jewish experience, the Theodore Seuss Geisel Award given to the best beginner reader of the year, and a whole host of other awards. The program culminates in what I refer to as the Big Two. The Randolph Caldecott Medal, given to the best illustrations in a picture book, and the John Newbery Medal, given to the book that has made the most significant contribution to children's literature in the past year. It is these last two that I spend a great deal of time thinking about over the course of a year. I follow Newbery blogs and Caldecott blogs, and I love seeing the results of the mock Newberries that are held in libraries and schools across the country. So, what do I think will win the Newbery this year? Well, I have no idea. But my favorite so far is The Trouble with Heroes by Kate Messner. But I also think that Pocket Bear is fabulous. The Undead Fox of Deadwood Forest by Aubrey Hartman, which I talked about previously, is wildly unique and left me thinking. Always a good sign. I really hope that Jewel Parker Rhodes gets recognition for her fabulous Will's Race for Home, which I talked about at the end of 2024, thinking it was eligible for last year's awards. Turns out it was a 2025 copyright, and therefore eligible this year. There are, of course, several books I haven't brought before you that I think are really good, including The Winter of the Dollhouse by Laura Amy Schlitz and All the Blues in the Sky by Renee Watson. Two nonfiction books I hope receive recognition are A World Without Summer by Nicholas Day, which discusses the global ramifications of an earthquake in the very early 1800s and connects that to not only global hunger in subsequent years, but also the writing of the book Frankenstein. And a wonderfully thorough account of Jim Jones and the People's Temple cult titled Death in the Jungle, written by the incomparable Candace Fleming. I will happily read anything Fleming writes, and I'm very glad I picked up this book. I was not quite 14 when the People's Temple members had terminated themselves by drinking punch laced with cyanide. As a result, I, along with my peers, would often describe somebody who went along with somebody else's thoughts as somebody who was drinking the Kool-Aid. Fleming's book dove so much deeper and carved a literary trail through the jungle of Guyana and fleshed out a story that kept me turning pages long into the night. I hope the book receives deserved recognition, and under the heading of "When you know better, you do better," I'll probably stop using the phrase "drinking the Kool-Aid" quite so glibly. If you are free around 10 o'clock Central Time this morning, tune in to the ALA Youth Media Awards, where you too can hear it firsthand. Direct your favorite device to ala.unicron.com. That's ala.unicron.com, and be among the first to know. Happy reading.
You'll be able to find all of Tracy Campa's recommendations later this morning at kaxc.org. And as Tracy just mentioned, you can watch the Youth Media Awards 10 a.m. this morning at ala.unicron.com. And tune in next week as Tammy and Tracy will rehash the awards and the winning books. What We're Reading is made possible in part by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota. It's the Monday Morning Show here on People Powered KAXC. I'm Jennifer Barr with Steve Noy.
Good morning. We receive support from the Hibbing Chrysler Center, serving northern Minnesota, carrying Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, and Ram vehicles, with staff available to assist on the Beltline in Hibbing or at hibbingchrysler.us.
Some current temperatures: 16 below in Aiken, 14 below in Bemidji, 21 below in Hibbing, 18 below in Grand Rapids, and 16 below zero right now in Brainerd. For today, we can expect kind of a mix of clouds and sun, depending on where you are. Highs 5 to 10. We've got some light snow possible this afternoon. Southwest winds up to 30 miles per hour. We do have that extreme cold warning in effect until noon for much of the area. If you don't have a cold warning, you have a cold advisory. Not entirely sure of the difference between those two, but you know it's cold. And tomorrow, we can expect mostly sunny skies with highs near 4 and blustery northwest winds. And for Wednesday, partly to mostly sunny with highs in the single digits. I think we're kind of doing a slow, gradual warm up throughout the week. I'm seeing temperatures into the upper teens by the weekend. So,
all right. Give us a chance to thaw out slowly.
Yeah. Maybe yeah. Not to, you know, we won't be melting anything,
right, yeah,
but
right.
We'll be a little warmer, which is always nice.
There we go.
And, we were just saying amongst ourselves that it's the last week of January, and a week from today will be February 2nd, Groundhog's
right.
Day. So it's always a, you know, it's kind of the, I think it is the halfway point between the winter solstice and the spring equinox.
Okay.
It's like right in between. So that's why we have that day.
Okay.
So.
All right. And yeah, we get to find out if we have a longer winter ahead of us or if it's, yeah, okay.
Yeah, I don't, yeah, the groundhog,
yep.
You know.
Yep.
It's I don't know if he can be trusted.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. you are listening to 91.7 KAXE in Grand Rapids and 90.5 KBXE in Bagley and Bemidji. We are Northern Community Radio, telling the stories of the people and land of Northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. Operating translator K210DR in Brainerd at 89.9. You can listen at kaxe.org or on your smart speaker. We need people like you to support this local media. Text the word donate to 218-326-1234. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for your support.
Coming up in our 8 o'clock hour, we'll have more news from National Public Radio's Morning Edition. We'll also hear the Up North Report with Megan Buffington. And before 9 o'clock, a conversation on how greater Minnesota residents are showing